there may be an imminent attack, very serious attack against the civilian population, which is why we're raising the alarm today.
Myanmar military deploys heavy weapons. It's Monday, October 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia under fire. Journalism for peace. A tech giant remembered. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations Human Rights Office warns the deployment of heavy weapons and troops by the Myanmar military into Chin State, Central Sagang, and Magway regions over the past few weeks may portend an imminent attack in these areas. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet has been raising concerns for some time about a possible military crackdown on growing civilian resistance to the Tatmadaw, Myanmar's armed forces. The commissioner's spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, says the announcement that two special operations commanders have been directed to address the conflict in these areas has set alarm bells ringing.
And the deployment of these high-level commanders, coupled with the internet shutdown and the deployment of heavy arms to this area, has really, you know, led us to become very alarmed and concerned that there may be an imminent attack, very serious attack against the civilian population, which is why we're raising the alarm today.
More than 1,200 people reportedly have been killed since the military overthrew the democratically elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi on February 1st. Shamdasani says violations and mass detentions of civilians have stepped up since September 7th. This escalating abuse, she notes, coincides with the declaration of a people's defensive war against the Myanmar military regime. Over the past month, she says, her office has documented many attacks by the military in Chin State, Central Sagang, and Magway. She says people have been killed, villages raided, and houses burned in an apparent effort to find armed resistance elements and sympathizers of ethnic armed groups.
There have been reports of mass arrests, as well as torture and summary executions. Military clearance operations have involved the use of artillery barrages and airstrikes against villages. The internet shutdowns have also meant that millions of people have lost the means to communicate with each other and to obtain information necessary for their survival.
Shamdasani says the Tatmadaw government has not responded to the report. She notes that is because the United Nations does not recognize the Tatmadaw authorities as Myanmar's legitimate rulers. Therefore, she says, her agency and other UN agencies have no direct contact with them. Last month, Myanmar military spokesman Saw Min Tun said opposition groups known as the National Unity Government were trying to destabilize the country, but were headed for failure. The spokesman also accused media outlets of spreading fake news on the situation in Myanmar, according to Reuters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You'll find all the latest developments on Myanmar by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, Facebook at VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China presses U.S. to cancel tariffs. China restricts abortions to counter shrinking population. South Korea's Lee seeks primary win in presidential race, overshadowed by scandal. Philippine presidential hopefuls launch campaign to replace Duterte. Australian Central Bank warns of Evergrande collapse dangers. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more are found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. It's nice to have you with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. Authorities in eastern Australia are warning that grass and crop fires are their greatest concern as the new bushfire season is beginning. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Grass fires can spread quickly and are hard to contain. Higher than average rainfall during the winter in parts of eastern Australia has left many communities vulnerable. David Elliott is the New South Wales Minister for Police and Emergency Services.
We'll see a significant risk to the communities across New South Wales of grass fire. That is the concern. The mapping has suggested that from the Queensland border down to the Victorian border, particularly amongst the central western part of the state, the risk for grass fire is immense. Communities across the state are reminded that they need to prepare themselves for fire.
An emergency or a natural disaster can happen no matter where you are, whether you're at home, work, or travelling. The new Australian Warning System is a national approach to warnings during emergencies.
The New South Wales government is spending $350 million on a fleet of new fire engines and protective equipment for frontline volunteers. There's also investment in fire behaviour analysis and more hazard reduction or the controlled burn-off of vegetation. There's also funding to implement Australia's new National Fire Danger Rating System. New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Rob Rogers says his organisation is ready for the threats that lie ahead.
We've never been better resourced. We've never been more prepared than we are this year. Whilst there will be fires, we'll deal with them like we have other fires, but please don't be complacent. Make sure you've cleaned your property. Make sure you have a bushfire survival plan. Make sure you know what you and your family are going to do if fire threatens.
The firefighting effort in Australia has been boosted by the return of a Boeing 737 large air tanker that's been on deployment for 2 months in North America, mostly Canada. It can drop 15,000 litres of water in under 3 seconds. Southeastern Australia is one of the world's most fire-prone regions. Fire seasons vary across the country and blazes occur year-round. The New South Wales official fire season runs from October through to March. The Black Summer fires started in Australia's hottest and driest year on record in 2019. 24 million hectares of land were burned, 3,000 homes were destroyed, and 33 people were killed. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, very special prize winners. Happening now in Asia, Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen reiterated the island does not seek military confrontation but will defend its freedom. At the Yushan Forum in Taipei, her statement came after increased tensions with China and growing airspace incursions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. And we have big news for journalism since we last met. Russian journalist Dmitry Muratov of Novaya Gazeta and Philippine journalist Maria Ressa of Rappler have been named the recipients of this year's Nobel Peace Prize, a move press freedom advocates are hoping will shine a light on the threats to a global free press. Isha Sarai has more.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2021 to Maria Ressa and Dmitry Muratov for their efforts to safeguard freedom of expression, which is a precondition for democracy and lasting peace.
Maria Ressa, co-founder of Philippine media site Rappler, said Friday she was shocked to have received the award. Ressa has nearly a dozen cases brought against her by the Philippine government, which could amount to a century in jail time. But in an interview with VOA earlier this year, she reiterated her commitment to her work.
I think what the government doesn't know is the abuses of power that we live through only fuel my determination to hold on to my rights. Right. Yeah. Like, I'm not voluntarily giving up my rights. And my task as a journalist like yours is to hold power to account.
Press freedom experts say journalists around the world face increasing threats and note that a free press is essential to any functioning society.
These larger challenges that we face, the multitude of challenges we face, we can't really grapple with them without being informed, without having information, without having journalists who are able to go out and report the news and report it honestly and accurately.
Dmitry Muratov runs what the Nobel Committee called the most independent newspaper in Russia today, which he began in 1993 and has continued to run, despite six of his colleagues being killed for their work. After Friday's announcement, he staunchly stated the prize was dedicated to his slain colleagues.
This award is for Anna Politkovskaya, Yuri Shekochihin, Igor Domnikov, Anastasia Baburova, Stas Markelov, Natasha Estimirova, our fallen journalists who gave their lives for profession. I am not the right beneficiary for this prize.
The journalists, as well as press freedom advocates, hope that this year's prize will highlight global challenges to free press, as well as underscore the importance of accurate and critical reporting. Isha Sarai, VOA News.
10 years ago, Steve Jobs passed away from pancreatic cancer at age 56. Jobs played a huge role in making Apple one of the most successful companies in the world. But what does Apple's future look like? Karina Befredjian explores as Anna Rice narrates.
Steve Jobs passed away on October 5th, 2011, after years of fighting pancreatic cancer. He was 56. He was as close to a rock star as anyone in the computer world has ever come. Books and films have been made about his life. There's even a Steve Jobs look in the fashion world.
He really gave that company a public face. He became synonymous with Apple. And of course, Apple became synonymous with the new world, the new digital place that we lived, which was so much different than ye olden days before that came along.
At 21 years old in 1976, Jobs founded Apple with his friend Steve Wozniak. Then he released a new personal computer model he named Macintosh and earned his first million. Jobs left Apple in 1985 because of some personal conflicts. He returned in 1996 to a struggling company that lacked customers. With Jobs at the helm, Apple regained its footing, and a few years later, the iMac, iPod, MacBook, iPhone, and iPad began changing the personal computing world.
Apple was not only a technological revolution, but a lifestyle.
Even after Jobs' death, the tech giant continued to move into new markets and break new records. In 2018, Apple became the first company in the world with a market capitalization of $1 trillion. In 2020, this number doubled. The company also released new products in addition to iPhones, wireless headphones called AirPods, and a smartwatch simply called Apple Watch, among others. Experts say it is Tim Cook who should take full credit for the company's success in the past decade. He became head of Apple after Jobs' death.
Obviously, Steve Jobs was a visionary, but when he died, the company was at a point where they actually needed a operations guru and not a visionary guru. So I'm not so sure that Tim Cook was not the perfect fit for that stage of Apple's life.
According to a Reuters report, Apple's next ambitious goal is to build a viable and competitive autonomous electric vehicle. But so far, no one is confirming that. But with the loyalty the Apple brand still carries, it's possible you could one day see people lining up for the newest version of the Apple car. For Karina Bafrajan in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today, and much more is coming your way on VOA Asia this week. Continue online. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can find us on Instagram and YouTube. We thank you for joining us. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.